Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, who herself has inaugurated a new series of podcasts. How's it going, Layla?
It's good. I'm catching on, I think.
It's tough talking into a microphone with, I mean, you're an expert lecturer, but here you're just talking to an inanimate microphone.
Exactly.
And trying to gather your thoughts.
I'm talking into the ether.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Just keep those visualization exercises going. Imagine your audience out there listening raptly to you while they take out the garbage or wash the dishes or whatever they're doing, driving in their cars. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So today, the next question has to do with natural ACE inhibitors.
Yeah. Joseph writes, hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. In regards to blood pressure, I was hoping you could talk about any supplement or supplements that might mimic ACE inhibitors, which help to, you know, which is the effect on the renin-angiotensin cycle in the body.
Right. So, okay, so here's the deal. When it comes to blood pressure, there are literally scores of medications that are available. And they break down into different categories. And for each category, there are a lot of me-too drugs. So there are ACE inhibitors, which means angiotensin-converting enzyme receptor. Angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors. There are ARBs. There's angiotensin receptor blockers, which are a related medication. There are beta blockers. There are alpha blockers. They work on different parts of the nervous system. There are diuretics, different types of diuretics, which actually reduce the fluid volume, so there's less of a head of steam in your arteries. And there are other types of centrally acting medications, really powerful medications clonidine and things like that. I guess it's an alpha blocker. So what that suggests is that there's a multiplicity of mechanisms involved in hypertension. And sometimes patients require two or three different medications that have an additive effect to help their to help bring their blood pressure into normal range. Recently, there was a study that suggested that we need to tighten blood pressure control in people with heart disease or kidney disease. It doesn't mean that everyone has to have very tight blood pressure control. I think that's unfortunately the way the study will be interpreted. But previously they said, well, you have blood pressure 140 over 90 or less. Okay, fine. But if you have, it depends on who you are and what your risks are. If you have high risk, you might need a tighter blood pressure control. So, for example, I saw a gentleman the other day who's had a mild stroke. I checked his blood pressure. It was a little high. And ordinarily, if he was just a healthy individual, I'd say, yeah, we'll let that go. But because he's had a stroke, we want tighter blood pressure control with medication. Okay, so let's talk about the natural ACE inhibitors. The natural ACE inhibitors, there are two kinds. There are fish peptides, and there are milk peptides that can be analogous to drugs. It's a little bit like the situation with statin drugs and red yeast rice. You know, red yeast rice
is kind of a statin,
Yeah, it has a statin-like effect. It's milder than a statin, and it's actually the original principle under which the statins were discovered and then synthesized. They're no longer made from red yeast rice. There are certain natural ACE inhibitors that you can get either from fish peptides or from milk peptides. And, I've used them, and I have to say that they're somewhat effective, but I'm not that enthusiastic about them because, number one, they're weaker than medication, they don't necessarily have less, because they're weaker, they have less side effects than medication, but just substituting a natural substance for a pill isn't necessarily a holistic approach. A holistic approach is looking at all aspects of lifestyle, you know, weight and exercise and diet, and the use of, you know, things that are natural, like magnesium to help blood pressure, omega-3 fatty acids to help blood. Yeah. I think that is more natural than finding in nature something that has an activity similar to a drug.
Even the particular form of magnesium that I think is good for blood pressure is magnesium taurate.
Indeed.
Because there's the benefit of taurine, which has a little bit of a diuretic effect as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it might have a little bit of a neurotransmitter effect, like a dilating effect. But we also forgot to mention nitric oxide, which is, you know, you get from... I think there's a question later about that, so maybe we'll save our discussion for later. But anyway... you know, some of the, I don't want to mention the whole list of products, but there is, you know, some basis for believing that these things could work. Things that are derived from marine organisms. One thing I will also mention, just another interesting fact, is that there seems to be a racial disparity in response to ACE inhibitors. ACE inhibitors seem to work better in Caucasians than in African Americans, and there's a very high degree of African American hypertension, and African Americans don't derive the same benefits, according to some studies, as do Caucasians. Now, of course, you know, there's such a degree of racial admixture in this country, it's hard to say that, you know, if you are African American and perhaps, you know, you do your lineage and you know, you might be 50-50 in terms of Caucasian or African lineage. It's hard to say that on that basis, you know, we have to decide that you will or not respond to a drug. But as medical articles have been written about the advisability of starting an individual from one race or another on one or another of the hypertensives, it unfortunately, it's more or less trial and error. It's like, try this, see if it works, see if you tolerate it. It's hard sometimes to predict.
And also having to take any side effects into account as well.
Indeed. And they're often, you know, all these medications have side effects. And to a greater extent or not. But, you know, also keep in mind that it is actually the norm for people over the age of 55 or 60 to be on at least one antihypertension medication. That's how prevalent their use is in America.
All right, Joe, thank you very much for your question. All right, and here we have a question from Jennifer. I've been listening to your show for a while now, Dr. Hoffman, and I've been contemplating trying Super Beets. But when I look at their website, I see that they contain stevia, that the product contains stevia, and I find myself to be allergic to stevia. Is there anything else I can do?
Well, that is, I find, that's a rather rare phenomenon that someone is
that
allergic
is,
to.
Yeah, yeah,
I've not even.
I wonder what her reaction is. But
yeah, and have in all your nutrition counseling over, you know, 15 years, have you seen that?
No, I've not.
Okay.
No,
and
nor
have I seen
I
that in my medical practice.
Allergy, or it could be intolerance, it could be sensitivity, which mean different things. But what I would advise to Jennifer is eat some beets.
Yeah, exactly.
Put some beets in your salad. Get some fresh beet juice from time to time.
Fresh beet juice the ultimate is that is really going to give you a nitric oxide boost. Unfortunately, it's messy and it's time consuming, and some people find the taste kind of grody. Don't want to, chug down that. I used to drink beet juice before races. But I always found that it made my stomach do somersaults, literally. And I got a strong stomach. I was like, whoa. You know, I just feel like really like.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd sooner, chug a glass of tequila than.
A whole glass.
Yeah. It's somehow just really strong on your stomach. But there is an alternative, and that's actually one of our sponsors on my weekly radio program, is Super Beets. They make a powder form, and they also make a lozenge. And you can find out more about that at intelligentbeets.com. Intelligentbeets.com is the website for my promotion of Super Beats.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question, Jennifer. All right. Let's see here. We've got a question from Gabriella. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, desperately in need of help settling a dispute between my 81-year-old father and myself. Recent visit to his doctor, his A1C, his hemoglobin A1C, was flagged at 6, indicating prediabetes. His doctor didn't seem to notice this or didn't think it was important enough, and I brought it to my father's attention and told him to contact the doctor, and he refused, saying that I'm overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
He does exercise regularly. He eats chicken, fish, fruits, and vegetables. Too much fruit, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But he also enjoys his daily doses of sweet comfort food consisting of cookies,
okay.
chocolate milk, and beer. Oh, milk chocolate, rather,
right.
And beer. Well, those last three I would watch.
Yeah, you know,
you probably keep the fruit.
This actually is almost like a moral dilemma. Because, you know, on one hand, you know, there's a lot of 81-year-olds who have lots and lots of life ahead of them and a lot of viability ahead of them.
Yeah.
But medicine, unfortunately, tends to think of people that age as being near the end of their lives. So it's like, hey, you know, life is short. Enjoy life while you can. You know, have a few indulgences. You know, there's not a lot of other sources of pleasure, gratification when you're 81, so knock yourself out. That's what a lot of doctors think.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there is evidence that for each 0.1 point increase of hemoglobin A1C above 5.6, there's about a 10% increase in your risk of dementia, which is a big problem at that age. So it look, the locus of control is the individual. It's that, you know, and getting your parent to do something that they don't want to do is always a struggle. But I encourage my patients of that age, I feel them out. I sort of say, you know, how committed are you? How far do you want to go down the line here? Because it's a risk-benefit equation. It's, yeah, you know, you're going to have some deprivation because you won't be able to access everything you want to eat. But on the other hand, that may translate to disease-free longevity for you if you control your blood sugar within a tight, normal range. Now, the other thing that happens, frankly, is people age, they lose control of their blood sugar naturally. There's a little decompensation of the insulin regulating mechanisms, maybe a little less production of insulin by the beta cells in the pancreas. And, you know, just like hearing and vision decline, your insulin production may decline. So it's sometimes a little harder to control blood sugar.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean, you know, we should give up. It just means that it might be more challenging.
Yeah.
And you get away with less, unfortunately. It's the ironic thing in life is you get away with, you know, you think life is a merit system, but, you know, progressively you get away with less.
Yeah. I mean, here he is. He's 81 years old. He's in pretty good health except for this A1C. But he's having these sweets daily. He's having cookies, milk chocolate, which is much higher in sugar than any dark chocolate.
No question.
And beer. What I would suggest to Gabrielle's father is not to, you know, cut everything out, but to reduce it greatly. That's all he has to do. Mm-hmm. If he's having these things daily, maybe he could cut it down to twice a week. That all by itself will make a difference in his A1C.
Right. Well, we're up against another phenomenon, which is that sometimes as people age, especially the old, and I'm not saying that 81 is old, but, you know, people well along, they have a sort of a change in their taste buds, unfortunately, and they tend to gravitate towards spectacular tasting sweet pastry type things, and that's to their detriment. But nonetheless, especially we see this in patients who have Alzheimer's or dementia, is they just really crave sweets, and sometimes it's because of the medication that they're on that stokes their sweet craving. But it's as if the you know, tongue no longer responds to virtuous foods. It requires a little more fireworks to stimulate the taste buds. Also, I think as people get older or as people get demented, their range of gratification narrows. And, you know, we in our middle age, we have a lot of outlets. But, you know, as you get older, perhaps progressively less mobile and, you know, vision and hearing, social interaction are inhibited. It becomes just like with babies and small children. Oral gratification becomes much more important. And that's, you know, we have to fight against that a little bit.
Right. Gabriella, best of luck with your father. Okay. We've got a question.
We have time for one more question.
One more question. Okay. This comes from Marge. What diet and supplements are good for daughters of DCIS mothers with no genetic markers? The mother had no recurrence since original mastectomy in 94.
Mm-hmm. Which now, in retrospect, might have been unnecessary in light of a new study that I've talked about. You know, this is like, you know, sometimes when a pitcher makes a mistake and throws a high-hanging curveball to, you know, the power slugger, the designated hitter on a team, and they just hit it out of the park. This is an example of that. Because thank you for that question, because I just wrote a 3-part series on that theme. Not so much the generational thing, like what do you do to for the daughter of someone who's had DCIS, because it's by no means certain that a daughter is at high risk. It's just a little more likely that the daughter is at high risk. I wrote the article specifically for patients who have DCIS, that's low-grade DCIS, where the new studies are suggesting that watchful waiting or active holistic surveillance is just as effective as having a mastectomy, which unfortunately a lot of women, you know, tens of women, millions of women have undergone mutilating surgery, and it's only now that they've just found this out. Yeah. In addition, just this week, they've developed a test that will help to discriminate which women will benefit from chemotherapy and which will not in early breast cancer. And unfortunately, now the default is, you know, might as well have chemotherapy because we just don't know. You might be one of the ones to benefit, although, you know, you're only improving your survival chances from, like, you know, 91% to 94%. Well, on spec, some women will opt for the chemotherapy. The vast majority of women are sort of stampeded into that. The new test will help us discern, you know, whether it makes sense to undergo chemotherapy, if there's a benefit, or if it's just a, you know, unnecessary, not just a waste of time, but potentially harmful intervention with no benefit. So, so speaking to that, I obviously don't want to reiterate everything in the article, but the point is that diet, exercise, even sleep matter when it comes to breast cancer prevention. And then there are a raft of supplements that I listed that could be utilized by women desirous of breast cancer prevention. And, you know, with the caveat that, you know, there sometimes is a need for medical treatment, for surgery, for radiation, for chemotherapy, or hormone treatment. And also that if you're undergoing, if you have advanced cancer and you're undergoing treatment with chemotherapy, radiation, hormones, you have to be a little careful about using supplements because, depending on what...
Some may interfere.
So that's why, you know, generally it's best to see a, you know, if you actually have cancer, it probably is not a bad idea to see a nutritionally oriented professional like myself or Layla to sort it out for you. Like, what can you safely take and what maybe, you know, might want to forego. But for general prevention, go to drhoffman.com and take a look at that article because it's a pretty good summary of, I think, if I have to say so myself, of some of the measures that are plausible and backed up. And I back up everything. Everything is backed up. There's lots of links to the actual scientific articles that describe the benefits of various lifestyle interventions and supplements. So it's all there for you, free of charge.
Marge, go to drhoffman.com and look for those articles. They're there. They've been posted recently, and it's a world of information for you and your daughters.
And apropos of that, we love doing these podcasts, and it's really a joy in getting information out to you. But to help ensure their continuity by shopping at drhoffman.com, help support, you know, if you like what you're hearing and you want to continue to receive this content free of charge, get some great supplements at great values, and also help support our efforts to continue providing information via the Intelligent Medicine Podcasts and via drhoffman.com and our newsletter, which is free as well. You can sign up for it. And anything to add this week, Layla?
I would say that's about it. Everybody continue to be well, and thank you for listening.
Be well.
Be well.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.